Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some good news. The House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee passed a $547 billion package early this morning, aimed at doing what we've been talking about, fixing our roads and bridges. My problem, again, keeps from coming back to the Senate, who's saying, no, we're going to protect the wealthy. We're not going to raise taxes to pay for it. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to build dirt roads and put tolls on them. That's really, really problematic. But this is a good start. This package that they have passed, I think, is a good start and hopefully going to move us in a direction that we need to get into, which is why it's called the Invest in America Act. And here to share some thoughts on, are we really going to invest, or is this just going to be another one of those things that goes to the Senate and dies a sad, disastrous death? And here to share some thoughts, I've asked Greg Regan to come talk with us. Greg's the Secretary Treasurer of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Invest in America. Who could possibly be against that?
Look, I don't think anybody's really against it. I think everybody recognizes the need to invest in our infrastructure. What we've seen recently is a disagreement over the definition of what actually is infrastructure. And that's, I think that is a little petty at times. And frankly, it misses the point about what we're trying to accomplish. But the House passed, the T&I committee yesterday passed a really good bill, this morning, actually. But it's got a lot of stuff that we really care about. It would make huge investments into transit and passenger rail, highways and bridges, electric vehicle infrastructure. It's a good bill that would help every single state and every single district in this country.
Does it have pipes in it? I know the governor of South Dakota was quite distressed that there would be something that had pipes in it.
Yeah. I mean, I would have to look at what the pipeline infrastructure looks like, but let's be clear. I mean, nothing in this bill. And I know that there was a lot of talk from the other side. It's like, it's a Green New Deal. It's all a Green New Deal. That's a disingenuous argument. This is about investing in our existing infrastructure and finding a way to make sure that we can compete on emerging technology and emerging infrastructure.
Right.
And frankly, this is a really good start.
No, I see. My mind didn't go to pipelines with her. My mind went to she probably didn't have indoor plumbing at some point, and because she was talking about housing and plumbing or housing and pipes, and I'm going, that's infrastructure. It's a physical thing. It's there. I get the argument against broadband because we can't see it in the sky, and evidently we're going to find out later it causes us to become like magnets. So that's coming.
Oh man.
Would you, again, that's the right response. We have become such a weird kind of country in this moment where we can't agree that I got a pothole out front. Can we get that filled, please? We can't even agree on that anymore.
Yeah. And look, the good news is I actually do think, we've changed a bit of we've turned the corner a little bit on the broader infrastructure debate. Whereas we used to have the discussion about whose role it was. There were a lot of people in Congress. There are still some, but there were a lot of people on the right in particular who thought that we should do devolution. We'll put the states in charge of everything. They're the ones who should fund it. The federal government shouldn't have any role here, and the state should do it all. And that has shifted. The real policymakers, even on the Republican side, the conversation's now more about how do we pay for it. And for a while there, they were saying that we can't raise the gas tax because that's raising taxes. And now the Democrats are saying, we'll fund it by repealing some of the corporate tax breaks that happened under the Trump administration. And you see the Republicans now saying, whoa, we need a user fee. And it's like, well, that's what we were talking about before. So, like, I think that it's sort of the shifting of the window there. We're starting to see the conversation move in a better direction. The Senate is a little bit trickier, as you mentioned, because we've got not only is it a slower body and a more, the deliberative body. It has so many committees that are responsible for different pieces of this bill. The Senate Banking Committee has the transit title. You've got Finance Committee that has a role to play in this. You've got Senate Commerce that's going to do the passenger rail and anything that deals with aviation and like the buses, Greyhound buses stuff. And all of them are going to have their own individual piece, but they're moving. And they're starting to talk about this seriously. And that, you know, the Senate Commerce Committee is going to move their rail title hopefully next week. And, you know, we may be able to actually do something here.
Is this a big enough bill? I know, you know, Joe Biden had said we wanted, you know, a much bigger package. Does this move us in the direction of where Biden's vision is? Because, look, I'm of the mindset, you know, we need a really big, chunky, massive investment to make up for, you know, decades long of disinvestment. I look at the American Society of Civil Engineers report, who said, you know, what do we need? Something like $4 trillion at this point just to get even, not to be the world's best, to just get even. This is a lot of money, but it doesn't quite get us to where the folks there at the American Society of Civil Engineers thinks we need to go.
So I think we're talking about two different things in a way here. The Biden plan, the American Jobs Plan, which we've endorsed, we think is puts an appropriate amount of money into all of our infrastructure. You know, $80 billion for passenger rail would be an incredible investment. That may still not quite be enough, but it means that we could fix some very, you know, century-old infrastructure that needs to be fixed and do it in a quick way, in an effective way, really invest in transit systems, really invest in airports, intermodal facilities, ports, all that stuff. The American Jobs Plan, that is more of a stimulus style, one-time massive infusion of funds into our system. That's not what Peter DeFazio's committee marked up yesterday. What they're doing is a surface reauthorization, and they're always going to be linked, because really what you're talking about is resetting the bar, raising the floor with the jobs plan, and then the 5-year or 6-year reauthorization that we're talking about with the Invest Act, that's following through on it. And establishing a longer term plan for how we invest in all of our systems. And frankly, I think they have to be hand in hand, but we're still talking about slightly different things.
No, I understand they're different, but at the end of the day, that you're still going to have a number, and that number is not going to be as big as we need. That's the point I was making, that
it's true.
You've got this organization who's saying, look, you know, we've evaluated the infrastructure of the country, and this is what we think it's going to cost. We're not talking in those terms. We're talking in percentages of those terms.
That's true, but we, you know, that if we're going from the baseline of the American Jobs Plan, and if we get 80% of that, 80% in terms of the funding dollars, that is still the most that we've spent as a government in decades.
Right.
You know. So, and we're going back to the Great Depression in terms of the amount of money you're talking about investing in infrastructure, maybe the Eisenhower era, but you know, that would be a huge step in the right direction, and one that could solve a lot of our immediate problems here.
Now, one of the things that I was surprised at, any of these transportation bills, I always make sure that somebody didn't get a little crafty and figure out a way to strip prevailing wage out of the bill. Still front and center. Because look, the other day we had the innovation bill that, you know, is pointed at being more competitive with China. You had John Cornyn, the Texas senator, who threw it out there, and you got 8 Republicans to vote to leave prevailing wage in that bill. I was surprised that there wasn't a vote on this as well.
Well, I think especially in the House, they realize they've lost that one. I mean, there was an amendment to strip out Davis Bacon in their in prevailing wage laws. We have, you know, upwards of 40 Republicans who are going to vote for that, let alone Democrats. There's no bad Democratic votes. But I do think that the voice of the Biden administration, you know, what the president talks about when he releases the American Jobs Plan, and he says he name checks all of the important labor protection laws that we have in this country, whether it be prevailing wage, Davis Bacon, PLAs, 13C on the transit side, Buy America provisions, cargo preference, you know, all of the things that we really care about, that the president is proudly talking about and understanding and making the case for why that benefits our country. That gives everybody a lot of cover. We're not having those fights right now. And especially with someone like Peter DeFazio, who's been a friend of ours for a very long time, all of those things are in that bill. And we're that's a big reason why we're out there vocally supporting it.
No, again, you know, it's one of those reasons that I bring up so that my union listeners, they go, look, it's there. It's kind of like that, you know, like when you flip over the bread and you look for the union label. It's there. It's in there.
yeah.
But the other thing is, you brought it up here a second ago, was the Buy American provision, which for me, you know, I look at, you know, the tale of two bridges, the one out in California and the one in New York. One, we chose to go the route of using, you know, a project labor agreement. We used prevailing wage labor. We had Buy American provisions in that. It was done on time, under budget, and is a fantastic, well-built bridge. And then out in California, you got the one we went the China route with because, hey, it might be cheaper, and we find out it's never going to be done. And it was actually had massive cost overruns. And again, did I mention it's never actually going to be done? That's a problem and a lesson, I think, that I hope we've learned.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, this is one area where, frankly, the politics have shifted dramatically in the last 10 years. I mean, I remember the Bay Bridge, where you're talking about in California, was one of the first things I worked on, or one of the earlier issues I worked on when I joined TTD a decade ago. And, you know, at the time, we had a lot of opposition about trying to fix the loophole, the segmentation loophole, which is what allowed them to do that. We got it done, but there was some opposition even among Democrats. And now the Republicans are, you know, trying to out, you know, Buy America the Democrats. So we actually have an opportunity to do good policy. You know, a lot of the proposals coming from the other side aren't very good, and they're filled with loopholes, and there's a lot of corporate favoritism that's in there. But on the Democratic side, we have a chance to supplement Buy America laws, which are just, you know, setting domestic content with things like community benefits agreements, U.S. employment plan language, in a way to actually make sure that not only we're making it here, but we're making it with good middle-class union jobs.
No, and this is where, you know, I talk a lot about the fact that if we're going to make these kind of investments, we're going to spend this kind of money, it should lift up all the boats. That whole, you know, rising tide thing that people like to talk about. The sad reality is, as the tide rises, Jeff Bezos' $500 million boat is crushing everybody's little dinghies into the shore. So, you know, that benefit really isn't there, which is why I'm glad to see that there's a commitment to say, look, you know, we're going to make sure that everyone does better.
Yeah, it's always been common sense. If we want to make sure that we're going to spend public money, taxpayer money on stuff, we should make sure it's reinvested back into our communities. And that's really what this is about. And if we want to make sure that we expand our tax base and make sure that we expand opportunities, we should expand the opportunity for unions, have better benefits, and incentivize companies who are going to be bidding on procurement stuff. So whether it be trains or buses or even defense contract stuff, that part of the incentive should not be how low can we get in terms of costs and how can we squeeze out as much out of our workforce as we can. But if we're incentivizing them to actually have good jobs, provide good benefits, have training opportunities so that there's a ladder for a career advancement involved in these jobs, and you can build that into the contract to incentivize that behavior, that's going to benefit us as a country.
No, I'm right there with you. But for me, I don't know if it's – I hate the sound of being hyper-nationalistic, but on a certain level, we've got to – if we're building it here, we've got to – if we're putting up the bridge, we should be creating the steel and the cement and all the things that go into it. If we're rebuilding our transit system, we should be making the cars here with American labor and done by American corporations. And this is where – I get into some trouble because the only real cars that are being built are by a Chinese corporation. Yeah, they're here, but I'm struggling with the communist Chinese government owning a company that makes our transit systems. Or am I being overly nationalistic?
Well, look, I don't think you're being overly nationalistic, but at the same time, I think we ceded that manufacturing base decades ago when it comes to things like rolling stock. Because, you know, I will correct you that there's only one company that's making
there's two.
These trains. Oh, there's Siemens, but that's a German company. There's Kawasaki, that's a Japanese company. There's Alstom, that's a French company. Bombardier is a Canadian company. They all have facilities here and they're all competing for these things. And, you know, Alstom is a union company and they're not far from where I grew up in upstate New York. But the point is that none of them are American companies, and that just reflects that where we were, where our priorities were at the time when we had an opportunity to maintain our leadership in railcar manufacturing, we chose not to. And our policies reflect that, and we have an opportunity, especially with new technology, when you're talking about things like electric vehicles and you're talking about the next generation of high-speed rail. All this stuff means you're creating, there's going to be a new market, and we have an opportunity through solid government policy to reclaim that manufacturing base. And I think it'd be good. It's going to be good for us if we can actually successfully do that.
No, that's where I was going. I was tripping along. I was stumbling along, and you cleaned it up, and that's a good thing. Because at the end of the day, look, I want to. I believe in domestic production for domestic consumption. We build the things that we need, and we benefit from them, not just by having good quality products, but people having good quality jobs and having better lives. To me, it's that simple. Now, you brought up the new technologies because, look, I know Mitch McConnell said that, you know, all of these bills are, you know, a liberal wish list, or I forget how he put it, a liberal parade or something. But we are going to be moving to electric vehicles, and we do need infrastructure to be able to accommodate that, and we do need to invest in it. That just seems like, well, not a liberal wish list, but common sense. That's where we're going.
Yeah, and you know, people are, we're going, nobody wants to have to go to the gas station all the time. I mean, I think the idea that people are going to be hesitant to get electric vehicles is, I mean, I think the market is driving it right now. It's not like there's a huge amount of our, you know, government interference forcing people to buy Teslas or buy the newest hybrids or, you know, whatever the electric vehicles are. People want to do that. They want to.
Yeah, I want that new Ford Lightning.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds great. But we do need to have the infrastructure across the country so that this becomes a viable option to do the type of travel that Americans do. And yeah. We should be, heck, you want to make us the most competitive and the leader in the world on these things, then let's set up the infrastructure to allow that to happen.
Absolutely.
And then also make sure that we can make them here.
I'm right there with you.
Those are all important parts.
Last question I've got for you. How do we help move this along? What's the marching order out of all this? How do you see this going through?
Well, I think, first of all, we need the Senate to act. We're going to need if you feel like calling your member of Congress, calling your senator and saying, go pass this bill. We need infrastructure now. Do it. This is, in my view, it's been the can that's been kicked down the road for 40 years. And we have an opportunity right now with the president who has made it his number one priority to do something big that will make a difference for generations to come. Call your members of Congress, talk about, this isn't a partisan issue. This is an issue that is critical for our country. And if you want to talk about in competition, the threat of, you know, the looming Chinese threat and all that stuff, you know what we can do to actually solve this problem is invest in ourselves. And that's what I think this bill will do and what I think the American Jobs Plan will do.
Good stuff. Greg, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Good stuff. Greg Regan, Secretary Treasurer of the Transportation Trades Department there of the AFL-CIO. Check out their website, TTD.org. We'll get links out.
United we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.